Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
I love that intro music. We're back here on Fantasy Sports Today, closing out the show. Hour number three, NFC South preview rolls on. I'm Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz, Panthers and Bucks. This hour, we're going to be joined by Greg Allman from the Tampa Bay Bucks training camp. Give us an update on how all things are looking over there. That's going to come up at 11:30. Before we jump right back into the Panthers players, I'm already getting an update, George, that Mike Gesicki is making some big plays at Dolphins camp. But 20-some-odd minutes ago, maybe about a half hour now, Antonio Brown tweets, "Come play with me at Dez Bryant. Let's get the chip. Eat greedy, big plates. The eat greedy, big plates part, I think we can leave out. More interesting is Antonio Brown trying to recruit Dez Bryant. We know that he has been linked with in-division opponent, the Cleveland Browns. So I'll pose it this way. If you're Dez Bryant, you go to Pittsburgh or Cleveland?
Oh, I mean, from what we've heard from Dez, he wants a one-year deal, a make-good deal, and get a big contract next year. I mean, you go to Pittsburgh, I mean, if everything goes well, you're behind Brown, you're behind Bell, you can make a pretty good argument. Schutz is better than him at this point, and yeah. I would make that argument. Uh-huh. Where is your big season coming from? But you go to Cleveland, you got Tyrod Taylor, who couldn't make Sammy Watkins any better. And sooner or later, they're going to Baker Mayfield. I can't see having a big year there. And plus, we don't know what's going on with Josh Gordon. I mean, if I had a choice, if I'm Dez, regardless of the money, I'd go to Pittsburgh. I want a chance to win a cup. I was going to say a cup because I'm still in hockey mode. I want a chance to win a trophy, right? I'm always in hockey mode. So I'd go to Pittsburgh, better team. That being said.
Yeah.
I mean, regardless of what Antonio Brown's saying, I don't see the Roonies going with Dez. Not at the way he torched the Cowboys with what happened there. They already got one prima donna and Antonio Brown filming locker room stuff and putting it on Facebook. I don't think they want to deal with Dez here, so I don't see that being a possible match.
I don't think that Pittsburgh would do it because I don't think that they should. Look, right or wrong, Dez calling out his former team in the middle. You said this yesterday perfectly, so I'm just kind of reiterating. Calling out his former team while having a pending meeting is a complete lack of awareness. And for a team with Super Bowl aspirations, I don't think I'm bringing Dez Bryant in because I don't know if I necessarily need him. I certainly think that Antonio Brown's miles ahead of him. And I think Juju Smith-Schuster is actually comfortably ahead of Dez Bryant as well. Fantasy-wise, I'd rather see him land in Pittsburgh because if Josh Gordon's healthy, I'd take Gordon and Jarvis comfortably over him. I think that I would rather see what I have in Corey Coleman and David Njoku as well, and the quarterback situation is better with Big Ben. Let's move on, though, because I do want to talk about the Carolina Panthers. Those five names, if we could quickly just run through it so we don't lose track of that in just terms of C.J. Anderson or those guys, again, for anybody that maybe is just joining in on the program, C.J. Anderson, currently the 41st running back off the board in PPR scoring ADP. The five guys in front of him, 36, Carlos Hyde, then Rex Burkhead, Jamal Williams, Isaiah Crowell, Nick Chubb. Any of these guys you would move C.J. Anderson in front of, or you would be more likely to take C.J. before these guys?
I think I might take C.J. before all of them.
I agree.
Yeah, if right? I mean, if I knew for sure that Hyde or Chubb was going to be the starter there, I would take him. Hyde or Chubb, but we don't know which one. And it could be a split, and you got Duke Johnson there. Jamal Williams had the same problem with Aaron Jones when he comes back from his suspension, and Ty Montgomery is still there. Another three-headed monster. At least we know what role C.J. Anderson has. We're positive of it. He's going to be the guy going running with him with tackles. McCaffrey's going to catch the balls out of the backfield. Yeah, the goal line, it's a problem with Cam. But he is second choice here. I think the numbers you said are last segment. 750 yards, 6-8 touchdowns. I'll take that. The way you're drafting him, I'll take that. You're drafting him as a running back four. So you're drafting him to cover your bye weeks. An injury happens here. You'll take those numbers gladly. I'd have C.J. Anderson above all these guys.
Yeah, look, here's the thing. I trust him to lead his team in carries over all of those guys. He's the one I feel the most confident about. And honestly, if I keep going up the list, and maybe the ADPs are a little bit skewed because he's a more recent signing than some of these guys. So maybe as we get closer to the meat of draft season, his ADP will reflect that. But some of the other guys that are ahead of him, Chris Thompson, Duke Johnson, Marlon Mack, Kerryon Johnson, Marshawn Lynch, Tariq Cohen. I mean, that gets you up to the 30th. Tariq Cohen's the 30th guy. The same holds true. Marlon Mack or C.J. Anderson would be the guys that you would say, okay, they're probably, or maybe even a Marshawn Lynch, that they're likely to lead their team in carries. I think I might still take C.J. over all of those guys. But I want to move over to the other running back, which forces us to really just group it into then to the wide receivers because of how much McCaffrey's value is tied to receiving. 113 targets for him last year, tied with Funchess for the lead on this team, had 80 catches, 5 receiving touchdowns, and 651 yards. He is exactly what they said he was going to be as a wide receiver. I do believe that if he could not run the football at all, in that draft, he goes in the first 3 rounds as a wide receiver and plays in the slot. He's that good of a pass catcher. He added in the 435 yards with 2 touchdowns rushing, and you take that. It's very strange where a running back's running ability is the added bonus on top of the receiving. But here is my question with him, George. Right now, currently, the 11th running back off the board. So 113 targets. And I'm just wondering if that is sustainable. Because now there are some more names within the mix, with Greg Olsen likely to be back. They would hope for a full 16. And drafting a first-round running back in DJ Moore, I would also probably make the argument, Jonathan Stewart last year saw just 15 targets. C.J. Anderson at this point in his career, certainly a better pass-catching running back than what Jonathan Stewart was. So you add that plus a first-round drafted DJ Moore and Cam's favorite targeting Greg Olsen coming back. How concerned can I be about the target numbers for McCaffrey?
I don't think you should be all that concerned, mainly because I think they're designing plays for McCaffrey. You know, I don't think these are accidental throws to McCaffrey. Mm-hmm. They want him to be a part of that offense, catching balls out of that backfield. That's what he does. You know, he is, I'm not going to call him a game breaker. He's not that kind of guy, but he's dangerous when he gets the ball in his hands. They understand that, listen, you can run between the tackles, but he's not built for that. And if you do it a lot, well, then you're not going to have him for the end of the season because he won't survive. So they're going to design a certain amount of plays. I think 4 to 5 catches a game is about right. You know, obviously there'll be some games he catches more. You know, the yardage could be 40 to 50 yards. All the points add up. He's only valuable in PPR, and that's generally what we talk about here. We're not Jake Seeley. So already we got 10 points. You know, before we even talk about rushing yardage, we get up to 30, 40 yards. Now you talk about 14 points, you know, and the occasional touchdown. You know, so he's a 14 to 18 point a week player, which is going to be, it's going to be somewhat consistent because I think they will design, once again, to get the ball in his hands. They understand it can't be on first and second down through the tackles. It's going to have to be out of the backfield. Cam flipping the ball to him. And it also keeps defenses honest because let's face it, if Cam didn't have McCaffrey, his percentage, passing percentage would be even lower as far as completions because he's just not good at throwing the ball down the field. McCaffrey gives him that little outlet there. It also gives Cam a break where he doesn't have to go out and make a play. It's a design play, get on the ball, go. You know, so I'm not worried. I think his targets will be there. I think his catches will be there. When he said he had 80 last year, which is 5 a game, I think it's about right.
The targets for Greg Olsen, 2014-2016, played all 16 games in Carolina, 122, 123, 127. He has absolutely been Cam's favorite target. But you said something earlier about Cam that I do think is important. That they are trying, I mean, I feel like we hear this every year with him, but they're trying to have him make more high percentage throws. And if you were to pinpoint someone on this roster to help with that attempt, it likely is McCaffrey. And I do think if, I mean, he had 113 as a rookie. So if McCaffrey improves as a player, he should then at the minimum at least command maybe the 110 targets. I actually think the Greg Olsen return could be more damning to Devin Funchess than Christian McCaffrey.
It makes sense. What do we, I mean, I know Cam's not a young quarterback, but what do we always say about young quarterbacks? Who do they love to throw to? The big target, close to the line of scrimmage, your tight end, right? Because he's got obviously a big wingspan. He's a big man. You can see him, get the ball in his hands. Olsen is a very good tight end. My only worry about him, like I said, last year, you know, before the injury and even immediately after, he didn't look like the same Greg Olsen. Didn't look like he had the same burst. Looked like he lost a step, which really isn't that uncommon. You know, once again, he's getting up there in age. Players are going to lose a step. Almost accepted the Monday Night Football job that went to Jason Witten. You know, another older tight end who had lost many steps, actually. So, I don't think he had any steps left, actually. I was always shocked that Witten got open. I mean, come on, I could cover this guy. I mean, you know, what's going on,
George,
here?
I swear, every Cowboys game, when he would make a pass, my brother and I would scream, yak, because his yards after the catch, I don't know how. He must have no yards after the catch for his career. I swear, it felt like he caught it, fall down. Or he'd run horizontally. I am going to miss him a bit. He was an absolute treat to watch. And he's a great player, of course. But it just cracked me up, especially in the later years in his career.
I mean, it's absolutely... I mean, I'm a Cowboy fan. Love Jason Witten. But he just couldn't run. And it was funny. I was just to think, are these linebackers athletic? What are they putting on him that they can't stick with it? Is he that good a route runner where he's fooling people left and right? I mean, he's not running seam patterns here. So it was just strange.
I wonder if Olsen's getting to that once on like a injury report or something wild like that. What a treat Jason Witten
was.
Yes,
years ago.
You could go back to your
point. But I wonder if Olsen's getting to that.
Oh, okay.
I wonder if Olsen's getting to that point now. You know, Olsen's 33. You know, got the broken bone last year. And, you know, thinking about retirement. Actually, he had a terrible year last year, 17 receptions, 191 yards, although it picked up in the playoffs and at the end of the season when they needed him. Maybe it just took him a while to get going here. You know, so I don't know if he's that same player. You know, fantasy draft-wise, I took Olsen in one league, and that's it. You know, I won't have him in any other league. Mm. You know, I have one share of him. That's enough for me. I don't want to gamble too much that he's going to be an extremely useful tight end because I do wonder if his best days are far behind him now. Where now we're going to see close to what Witten does. Yeah, he'll get his catches, but no yak, and you're praying for the touchdowns. And we don't know if those are going to come. So I'm very concerned about, you know, Greg Olsen this year. And I don't know if he'll be that safety blanket that Cam needs. And McCaffrey, I think, certainly will be. You know, but I'm not so sure if Olsen's going to be that player. Bottom line is, I don't know how much he has left. You know, and after the broken leg last year, I wonder if maybe he's holding on a year too long. There's a reason he was looking for Monday Night Football.
So the four guys ahead of him right now, ADP, again, PPR, Gronk, Kelce, Ertz, Graham. I assume then you would have no issue with that. Olsen comes in at 5. The three guys that are behind him, and there's a drop-off then after 8, are Evan Engram, Delanie Walker, Kyle Rudolph. If all is equal, all on the board, you have to take a tight end. Olsen, Engram, Walker, Rudolph. Is Olsen still the first you would take of that bunch, or no?
Well, in that league I was talking about where I grabbed Olsen, my other choice is Engram.
Mm-hmm.
I like Engram a lot. I mean, a whole lot. Now, what we talked about yesterday with Emery is true. I worry about enough balls going around for everybody, but I think Engram is not the guy. I'm probably more worried about Shepard more than I am Engram. I think he'll get his touches there. The reason that I took Olsen over Engram in this league is I have Engram in two other leagues. So I once again, I just want to get a different share here. I got my one share of Olsen, and that's it. You know, I'd probably, let's say if I didn't want to take Engram there, I probably would have waited another round and seen if I could get Delanie Walker. Another, what I would call a safe tight end. You know, I don't think there's a huge upside there. I think that with Engram there is upside, but he's safe. And I know what I'm going to get. That's why I would wait a round or two. Jimmy Graham is interesting because I'm not so sure how high I am on him. He's not the same player he was with Drew Brees in New Orleans. Once again, injuries have definitely zapped what he can do. You know, so I'm, you know, iffy on Jimmy Graham. I understand it's Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, and he's great, and I love Aaron Rodgers. But I'm, you know, there have to be some chemistry issues there. Is he just going to be, once again, a red zone guy? Mm. You know, the end zone guy where you know, go up and get the ball? That's great. But is he going to be a useful tight end between the 20s? I don't know. You know, how's his health? He's a guy, you know, when we preseason football, you know, I listen, you're the NFL Network, you have it on all day, so you're seeing a lot of the games. But Jimmy Graham is one of those players I'll be paying attention to. I want to see how he looks. Mm-hmm. I want to see how he's getting off the line of scrimmage, how he's making his cuts. You know, that'll change my perception of him right now. Because I believe right now in my rankings, I have him at number 7 or number 8. I'm just not sold on him. But that there's a reason for preseason football. You know, generally a lot of it's garbage. But players on new teams and injured players are guys I want to take a look at. I want to watch. I want to see what they look like. That's how I'll make my final judgments on them come fantasy time.
Interesting tight end stuff there. Some other questions with the Panthers. We can get to that, though, in the last segment. Next segment, we switch over to the Tampa Bay Bucs. We'll be joined, hopefully, by Greg Allman to talk Bucs as well, live at training camp. So that's next here on Fantasy Sports Today.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Back here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Fantasy Sports Today, Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz. NFC South preview rolls on. Tampa Bay Bucks are up now, rolled through the other three teams here. And I mean, look, George, the biggest question becomes Jameis Winston missing those first three games. I ask you again, though, from the position of someone who has to rank all of these guys, with a quarter, with Jameis missing those first three games, how can that impact your rankings of Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson, the tight ends, and Ronald Jones, saying, all right, they've got Jameis, it's just not for the first three games. So have you seen that you've had to move those guys, I assume not drastically, but a couple of spots based on that information?
Well, I think you put it correctly. You're not moving these guys drastically, a couple of spots. And in some cases, like Mike Evans, you're not even removing him from a tier. Just that instead of a top tier, he goes down to middle to the bottom of the tier. That's all. You know, it's not like Ryan Fitzpatrick is horrendous. As far as backup quarterbacks go, he's solid. He's a solid backup quarterback. I mean, he's not a guy you mind having. He's not some rookie where you have no idea. You know, someone who's just like, oh, here it goes, a guessing game. Fitzpatrick's been around this game forever. He knows how to throw the football. He'll be okay. So, like I said, I dropped Evans 2 to 3 slots. No, I would still draft him. No issues there. I have issues with Evans as far as catching the ball. Drops a lot of passes. I always find that extremely humorous for a wide receiver whose job is to, you know, catch the ball that can't, you know, catch. It's annoying. You know, Terrell Owens had that problem, but still Hall of Fame players, so you have to live with it. It's frustrating, but you live with it. So I'm not really all that worried about Evans. Theoretically, no Winston means they should run the ball more, right? So Ronald Jones could be interesting, but Winston, in my mind, has very little effect on Jones. It's the other players around him. Rodgers, Barber, Sims. Not that any of these guys are great, but they're there. Mm-hmm. You know, are they going to give Jones full carries from day one? Or does he have to earn it? You know, are they going to split things up? Is Charleston going to be a short yardage guy? Quiz Ryan's going to catch the ball out of the backfield? They're going to go one of these things. You know, so this is another team that scares me. Another team you'll want to pay a lot of attention to in preseason to see how they split these things up, see if you get a read on it. Now, I'll say this. Another thing I like to say is, you know, whenever you see a coach talk, you know, when his lips move, he's lying. They're not telling the public anything. So you can't really believe anything they're saying. Oh, Jones looks great. He's going to get 25 touches a game. You know, you don't know that. They're lying. You know, so you need to really watch game film, practice, see what the reporters are saying that cover the team. They're the ones that'll tell you how they're lining up in practice. Jones is still the guy I want here. You know, I think they will run the ball more. They should run the ball more unless they're trailing. But I don't know if I see big things for him this season. But still, running back, rookie. If he lasts for the 7th, 8th round, I might take a shot on him. Mm. My biggest question mark probably on this entire team are the tight ends. You know, I like O.J. Howard a lot. I didn't understand, truly don't understand the re-signing of Brate for that contract, which is a big contract, $47 million. You know, salary cap era, when you have O.J. Howard. And Howard, you know, he got hurt last year. He played well when he was healthy, especially as the season went on here. It sort of, fantasy-wise, it makes them both not tight end ones, where I think they would both, either one would be a tight end one if the other one wasn't there. So I don't know if I get that. But once again, that's not Winston's fault. That has nothing to do with Winston. That has the fact that they're both there. So bottom line is this. Listen, Ronald Jones is probably running back 3. I'm not drafting either tight end because there's more than one there. Evans goes down a few slots. DeSean Jackson, I mean, he was a wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4 anyway. So if you want to, you know, if he was a 3, you want to make him a 4, that's fine. You know, he's going to have some big games, some games he disappears. I do like him better, though. He's the one guy I'm probably most concerned about with Fitzpatrick this first 3 games. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if Fitzpatrick can get him the ball deep.
I'll tell you with the DeSean Jackson thing, too, it's made me concerned for him in a way for the whole year because chemistry was a big bugaboo between him and Winston last year. And if they would have just been a little bit more on time, they might have won a couple of more games. They just missed some of those deep throws because Winston has the arm strength, and we know DeSean Jackson has the speed. So now, and look, they're going to have all training camp, all preseason. So it should be fine, but I you'd like to see them be together for the full 16, or at least as many full as possible, because that's another thing that is difficult with DeSean. Very difficult to pencil him in for 16. Now, we should be joined by Greg Allman in just a few minutes here from Bucks camp. So there's a lot of good stuff, too, that you can ask for, especially the Cameron Brate stuff. But I do think that Ronald Jones' situation is likely the most interesting one, is if he is going to end up being the guy in this backfield. And, you know, again, we say in this league it is rare to have these bell cows. That's why, you know, this year around, they're known as the big 4 at the top of the draft: Gurley, Lev Bell, Zeke, and David Johnson. And by no means am I suggesting that Ronald Jones is to enter that tier, but what I'm saying is if they can find a way to get Ronald Jones to have a comparable workload, if they view him as someone that has the potential to get into that discussion and they give him that opportunity, all 3 downs of work, then that becomes very, very important. He currently goes off the board as the 24th running back, so right on the cusp at the end of RB2, beginning of RB3 discussions there for Ronald Jones. The question that I think is probably for a lot of people is determining how you like the running back, but also how you like the fit with these rookies. Do you like the situation in Tampa Bay for Ronald Jones? Because I know I like the talent. The situation it's left me with questions.
I'm with you there, Kev. I had the same questions. I feel the same way. It's not the talent I'm worried about. It's the we don't know how they're going to use them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the other backs that are there. We all know running backs have a short shelf life. So if it's me, I'm putting him in there. If he's my best back and that works its way out during training camp, he's the man. Let these other guys figure it out for the backup role, the guy they want to catch the ball. But I want to go with Ronald Jones. I want to go with the guy who gives me the best chance to win now, which I do think that is Jones. But I just don't know if Derek Cutter's going to do that. You know, it's hard to trust the man with how he runs things here. You wonder, you know, if Fitzpatrick can't move the ball, Does that mean they're trailing? Do they have to go away from the running game until Winston gets back? Yeah, there's many things that go into it here. When I say Jones, I have him as a low-end running back three, running back four. It has nothing to do with the talent or the man. Mm-hmm. It's more the situation, or in this case, more the players around him. I just don't know how they're all going to be used. He could be one of those guys. There are always guys in the draft that end up being fantasy MVPs because they outperform greatly what we expected. That he, all of a sudden, Ronald Jones, oh, he is the guy. He is touching the ball 18, 20 times a game from week one. And you drafted him in round nine. You know, he could be that kind of guy. And for the value of if he's there round nine, fine. But what if he's round six? Mm-hmm. I'm a conservative drafter. I'm not going to take too many chances like that. Not when there are other players on the board that I do know what they're going to do, that I can bank on how they're going to be, how many touches they're going to get. With Ronald Jones, we just don't know that yet.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think one strategy I could see myself doing, because that's another thing that I've kind of just tried to put some notes down throughout these previews of situations that you can maybe take advantage of. Those first three games, Saints, Eagles, Steelers, should be 0-3. They're likely going to trail a lot in those games because those are very good offenses. And if that's the case, we could see Ronald Jones have a very slow start. A very slow start to the beginning of this season. And I think that owners might be very discouraged by that because they're probably saying, no Jameis Winston, run game's got to be heavy. And maybe he does have good performances. Maybe that's how that pans out. But if he only sees a certain number of carries because they're trailing by a lot, after 3 weeks, that owner could be very discouraged, and you might be able to get some very serious value on Ronald Jones, who actually would benefit from Jameis being there. Now, you know, the 25 carry, 30 carry stuff, you know, that you're maybe projecting is off the table, but maybe that was never going to come because they'd be trailing by too much, and you might be able to find yourself getting a bit of a steal, buying low on a guy that does have legitimate RB2 upside.
Yeah, once again, it's hard to disagree with you there. It's hard to fight that. And you could, like I said, you could get a bonus here with Ronald Jones. And I keep wrestling with myself. The problem is this. I'm generally in most leagues. Once again, most leagues that aren't, where you don't start two quarterbacks, I'm going to draft running backs early and often. So I don't want to put myself in a situation where I'm looking for upside at running back later, where I have to hope. You know, I'm not talking zero running back strategy, which is really a lot of hope, but a strategy where I'm like, oh, God, my first five picks, I have four receivers, one running back. I'm generally not going to do that. You know, I want to have two stable running backs, or guys that I believe are stable, probably in the first three rounds. You know, and then I don't mind taking one of the pass-catching backs later in a PPR, like Duke Johnson, Chris Thompson, one of the guys like that. So Ronald Jones, like I said, if I'm going to draft someone like him, he, for me, I want him to be an extra. Like, oh, if he works out, and like we're talking about, great. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't, I'm okay. Doesn't hurt me. Yeah, that's how I'm going to go about building my team. Now, listen, not everything is going to work out like that. That's the plan going in. As we know, fantasy drafts tend to have a life of their own, and it could go in any one of a million different directions here. But for the most part, if I go after Jones, you know, or someone, Nick Chubb, you know, say they were with Cleveland, or, you know, Kerryon Johnson with Detroit, another guy who was similar here. I want to make sure that if it doesn't work out, doesn't pan out, if it ends up being the other guy, it doesn't hurt my team. That's not a big deal. It's annoying, but being annoying and hurting are two completely different things. I can deal with annoying. Hurting is much more concerning, especially at the running back position.
So we are now joined by Greg Allman, who writes for the Tampa Bay Times, writes about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers lie. He was at training camp today. So, Greg, we were talking a lot about Ronald Jones and the upside for him. It is exciting, especially for fantasy players. And I know it's exciting for this team because they think that they might have got a really, really good running back. So from what you've seen early on, what's the early return in the reports on Ronald Jones?
Yeah, I mean, promising. They want somebody with big play potential, and he brings that. And if you look at what he did in college, just a lot of long touchdown runs, big play potential. That's something they didn't really have in Tampa really the last 2 years. I mean, my favorite stat on Ronald Jones is that the Bucs had a total of 9 yards combined on all their touchdown runs all of last season. And Ronald Jones had 353 yards on his touchdown runs at USC last year. So they have a chance to get a lot better. He's still got to learn about pass protection and the other aspects of being an NFL running back beyond just making big plays. But they're excited about him. He and Peyton Barber will kind of share the load as the two primary backs here. And then how that shakes out, you know, we'll still kind of figure out over the next 5-6 weeks.
Greg, as far as Jameson Winston won't be there for the first 3 weeks, so he's with the suspension. Do you expect the offense to change at all with Mark Fitzpatrick, with Ryan Fitzpatrick at the helm?
Not too much, no. I mean, I think they, you know, Dirk kind of talks a lot about wanting offensive balance. I mean, I think if they have their choice, they'll be a stronger running team this year. So, I mean, that's going to mean more run, less pass, if things go right for them, regardless of who the quarterback is. But, I mean, they have so many offensive weapons. I mean, you look at receiver with Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson and Chris Godwin now with Cam Brady and O.J. Howard as two tight ends that, you know, both had 6 touchdowns last year. There's a lot of weapons. I think an improved run game will help them in the passing game as well. But no, I mean, Fitz, they didn't pull anything back last year when Fitz, I mean, he had 3 starts stepping in for Jameis when he hurt his shoulder last year, and you still saw a lot of throwing. I think, I want to say Fitz had like 1,100 yards last year in basically 4 games. So no, they'll still throw a lot. And you know, Fitz is a guy that's been in the league 13 years, knows everything there is to know. So there's no need to scale anything back. He can do everything that they asked Jameis to do.
So, Greg, I saw Ian Rappaport say that Vita Vea limped off the field. It's probably just a calf strain, so nothing to be too concerned about. But he is their high first-round pick within this year's draft. And do you feel, I mean, they put a lot into that defensive line, even in the offseason, Vinnie Curry, Bo Allen, JPP. Do you feel like their plan is, even perhaps in the absence of Jameis, and even when Jameis gets back, is to lean on that defense to win them games?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely wasn't the case last year. So, I mean, if you looked at how they addressed the offseason free agency, the draft, the defensive line was front and center on all of that. I mean, you know, you give up a third-round pick to get JPP. You're paying him $12 million this year to be a pass rusher that you really haven't had. I mean, they had 22 sacks as a team last year, last in the NFL. I think they felt like, first and foremost, they had to get better against the run. So, like you mentioned, that's Bo Allen, that's Mitch Unrein, Vinnie Curry, drafting Vita Vea. Yeah, they need to get better against the run first and foremost. And once you do that, then you can get yourself in situations where the pass rush can become more of a factor than it's been. But no, across the board, that's where they'll be the most improved. And if they get to a point where they can be leaning on their defense again, that speaks really well for how well those moves have panned out for them.
As someone who drafted Vita Vea in my IDP league, I'm very happy to hear that it's just a calf strain. Got scared when I saw that report. Greg, how are the Buccaneers going to use the tight ends? They re-signed Cameron Brake to the big deal. You have O.J. Howard, who some believe could be a very good all-around tight end. How do you expect them to use both tight ends in the passing game?
Yeah, I think they'll use them both a lot. I mean, you know, last year, you know, O.J. Howard's just a rookie, just kind of picking things up, played a lot, probably didn't have as many targets as you would expect. Cam Brake's been Jameis Winston's best, you know, most successful red zone option in the last 2 years. 14 touchdowns in the last 2 years. That's where Brake really is at his best. And they want to be a better red zone team. So, you know, how that changes things, if that's getting Mike Evans more involved, that might take away some of the touchdowns for Brake, the fantasy aspect for him. But they like both of them. They can use them both together on the field. I think they feel like, as two tight end sets go, having them both out there doesn't necessarily give a lot of weight to a defense as to whether they're running or passing. So they'll have a lot of 3-receiver looks as well, but I think they can have a lot of success both running and passing with them both on the field. It wouldn't surprise me if they combine for 12 touchdowns or more again this season.
So, Greg, we got about 30 seconds left before we let you go. I just want to ask you your expectations as of today for this football team. A lot of people feel like they are a distant fourth place. Do you think maybe they're being a little bit undersold? What's your outlook?
Yeah, I mean, just because, I mean, you had 3 playoff teams in the division last year, and then the Bucs kind of bring up the rear. So they'll definitely be better. It's just a matter of how much better. Are they competing for a wild card? Are they just, I mean, they could be a lot better with the schedule and still just be 7-9 or 8-8. So, I mean, I think there's an urgency here. They want to get back to relevance. They want to get back to competing. They want to be able to keep the coach and the GM back here and have the continuity of having everybody back again in 19. But they got to take a big step forward to do that. So anything more than 8-8, there'll be a pretty good story here.
That is Greg Allman. Great stuff from him. Thank you so much for joining us. He writes for the Tampa Bay Bucks, for the Tampa Bay Times. You can find him on Twitter at Greg Allman, A-U-M-A-N. Thank you so much for joining us. We come back here to wrap up the show on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
For that last segment. Absolutely love it. Sean Angle doing a fantastic job downstairs. That was great stuff from Greg Allman talking to us about the Tampa Bay Bucks. It is a big season for them. I think he makes a good point. If they can pull it to 500 with some of the stuff that they know coming in, it could be a good year. Before we break that down just a little bit more, I just want to let you know that if you enjoy playing daily fantasy sports, odds are you do if you're listening to this network, but you're sick of dealing with the professionals using algorithms to select hundreds of lineups and entries, try the props builder tool at mybookie.ag. Forget having to create multiple lineups, ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches, and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Invest in the players that you want without salary caps. And if you sign up for a new account using the promo code FNTSY, you can elect an option to receive a 50% deposit bonus with a rollover requirement. No more dealing with late lineup scratches, no experts to compete against, just you and the prop that you choose. Go to mybookie.ag, enter promo code FNTSY upon sign up, and choose your matchups using the props builder tool. That's mybookie.ag, promo code FNTSY. So, George, you asked him about the tight end situation, and he seems optimistic about it. Does that help at all? How much value can you get really out of a two tight end system? Maybe it'll be really good for them, you know, on field, but on your roster, it probably still is a situation you just got to avoid.
Yeah, I'm going with you here. I think it sounds like a great problem for an NFL team to have. Mm-hmm. Yeah, guess what we're going to do? Which tight end we throwing the ball to? Maybe it's a run game. You know, we'll go to a double tight end set, give Max run blocking. But, you know, you want to pick which one. Cameron Brate and Jameis Winston have had pretty good chemistry, especially in the end zone, where it seems like Winston looks for him there. Mm. The problem is this. Tight end is sort of weak, right? After the first 8-9 guys, it gets interesting. You know, and that's where you'd like to be able to plug in a Brate, you know. But is there upside there? Probably not with Howard there, and vice versa. So I'd rather go with someone like Trey Burton, Jack Doyle, even Njoku, Kittle, sleepers that are in the tight ends. At least you know they're the only guy there. They're the only option there. I think even if you had both these guys on your roster, you'd be playing a guessing game week in and week out, mm-hmm. and you may not always be happy with the results. It's another situation. I like both tight ends, like them so much. I just wish they were on separate teams.
The more you say it, I get more and more confused that they brought Cameron Brate back. Because O.J. Howard was such a good prospect that people really thought the Giants were going to possibly take him at 5. Was it the Giants? Or no, it was the Jets at 5, I think it was, that year. At 6, where they took Jamal Adams. People thought that he might go at 6. To the New York Jets. And they were like, no, it makes sense. Like, I know it's a tight end, but he's that good. And he fell all the way to them. It was, I think it was 19. And they needed a tight end. And they got him because everybody said they're going to let Cameron Brake go. And they're like, this is going to be huge for this team. And the fact that they decided to keep Cameron Brake around, interesting. And look, maybe they know that Jameis wants to have tight ends there. And look, they're not, the roster construction is not based on fantasy football. It's terrible for fantasy football, but maybe for them, that's what they, obviously for them, that's what they feel like is going to put them in the best position to succeed. So I give them that credit. Something I asked Greg, which is kind of about this defense, George, and you know, there is talent there. They did their absolute best. You have to give them credit to try and fix that offensive line. And you heard him mention just how horrible they were at getting pressure on the quarterback last year. They bring in a bunch of new talent. They take Vita Vea in the first round. They assign Jason Pierre-Paul, Bo Allen, Vinny Curry. They already have Gerald McCoy there, who's an absolute beast. Their linebacking core, as you mentioned, is solid with Lavonte David and Quan Alexander. The secondary may be a little bit left to desire. You would really like to see maybe Vernon Hargraves have some type of breakout season. But do you think this defense, primarily this front seven, has the potential to win this team football games? And maybe they are being undersold a little bit.
Well, it's going to have to be the front seven, right? Because what you said about the secondary is correct. That's the weakest point. You know, that's where teams are going to attack you. Yes, if Hargraves can have a breakout season, this will be different. But even Brent Grimes at left corner, he's not the same player he used to be. He's taking a step back. Not bad, but once again, not the player he used to be. No true lockdown corners there. But I think the biggest question here is going to be a Jason Pierre-Paul. Can he get to the quarterback? Ever since the fireworks accident, I don't know if he's going to wear a club. It's going to be hard for him to latch on the running back, so stop the running game. It's just not going to be able to do. So I don't think that's going to be something he's going to excel at. So his job is going to be to get to the quarterback. That's why they acquired him. That's why they traded for him. And I was surprised the Giants dealt him, because Giants literally have the same problem now. Get to the quarterback. Up the middle, assuming Vita Vea can play, you think with him and McCoy, they should get a hell of a push up the middle. And generally, that's what quarterbacks, that's what bothers them most, if they can't step into a throw. So that should be good. So I think they have promise here that they could be dangerous as far as getting to the quarterback. The linebacking core, I would say, is above average. Quan Alexander, Lavonte David, you already mentioned him, Kendall Beckwith. Solid group. Now, I would say better than solid. I think on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably give him a 7 there. So I think the front seven is going to have to win the games there. I think teams could have trouble running against them, especially up the middle, because of McCoy and Vita Vea. But once again, we're assuming Vita Vea is going to be a player here. We don't know that. Maybe it takes a year or two before he truly develops. We don't know. So I think, like I said, the talent is there all over this team. There's two unfortunate things. One, as we all know, Winston got suspended. I think that hurts. And two is, it's the division. Assuming they stone off 1-2, 0-3, they're already behind the eight ball. Mm-hmm. And that schedule doesn't get a whole lot better. I think their biggest problem is they're just in the wrong division. If they were in the AFC, or the NFC West, things might look a little rosier for them.
Mm-hmm.
But because they have so many question marks here, because we don't know how Winston's going to play when he comes back, because of the schedule, and none of these games are easy, even when Winston comes back, even if he's playing well. And that's a lot of ifs. Everything's an if here. If Winston comes back, if Winston plays well, if the defense can hold up, if Pierre-Paul can get to the pass, can get to the quarterback. Too many ifs here for everything to work out for them. I just don't see it where this is going to be a banner season for Tampa Bay. But this is not a bad team. Under any circumstances, this is not a bad team. It's also why I wonder, with Dirk Koetter, is he getting the best out of this team? Because the talent seems to be there.
Yeah, it's almost like reverse Patriots, all right? Like, you look at the Pats, you look at that division, you say it's 5-1 at worst. Because you got the Dolphins, the Bills, and the Jets. Where you look at the box, and it's like, look, I like what they got there. Look at that division. It's 1-5 at best. That's what they were last year. Maybe it's 2-4. But three of those teams made the playoffs. Falcons look like they're better. You don't have much reason to believe that the Saints are going to be markedly worse. Panthers are concerning. They haven't really put back-to-back. I don't know if they've ever put together back-to-back winning seasons in Cam's time in Carolina. So, all right, maybe they slip up. But again, that still leaves you third. And it still leaves the division being an absolute mess for you to try to fight through. I mean, when you have 6 games versus playoff teams based on your conference or division alone, that's incredibly difficult. Now, I want to try and pull a couple of ADP for some wide receivers together throughout the entire NFC South. Just kind of give you where they're going and who you would like to have based on that value. Now, 3 guys that are somewhat closely grouped together. DJ Moore goes 47th. Calvin Ridley goes 48th, which is likely going to take Moore out of the running in this conversation because I know you like Ridley more than Moore, and Moore is going ahead of Ridley. Cam Meredith goes at 53rd. Now, again, this is all in terms of wide receivers, so I guess overall you've got, how's that possible? You've got DJ Moore at 132. You've got Calvin Ridley at 126, so that's completely backwards, fantasy pros. You need to figure that out. So we'll say Calvin Ridley's first guy, 126, off the board, overall player. DJ Moore, 132nd overall player off the board. Cam Meredith, 140th player off the board. They're close, a little bit of a distance, based on value and what you see for these guys. Who would be the one that you would like the most of that trio?
All right, well, I know the one who I like the least is Moore. And so I can take him out of the running as far as that's concerned. Ridley and Cam. I do like both of these guys. There's not a huge difference there as far as ADP, 126 and 140. It's double-digit rounds for both guys. Man, I am big on Cam Meredith. I just think he's going to be that kind of player with New Orleans. They signed into that offer sheet. They wanted him there. I think he's going to be healthy. I really like Ridley too. I'm having trouble pulling a trigger here. I'm going to go Cam Meredith. Give me Cam Meredith. I'll take the extra value there. It's close enough where I'll take the round later. I can get him.
Yeah, I think it's very close because of the value. If they were both on the board, I think I could lead in Ridley, but I think you could talk me into Cam Meredith with them both on the board. Like this could be a thing, George. Whereas if Cam Meredith is starting to have, you know, a good preseason leading up to all of this, we might see Cam get into that exact same range, and you could still convince me into that situation. So I agree that they're close. Next couple of guys that are, you know, similar in where their ADPs are. DeSean Jackson, 161st player. Mohamed Sanu is the 177th player. And then you've got Ted Ginn Jr. as the 189th player off the board. DeSean Jackson's the 59th wide receiver. Sanu is 162, and Ted Ginn is 66. Varying ADP is still within enough of range where maybe you have to kind of make that type of decision. Of those three, your favorite value?
I think DeSean Jackson's undervalued. And this is an old league. I've seen this. I've been in drafts where I can't believe he's still available. I think in the Scott Fishbowl, I got him around 20. And that's right. Yeah, there's 10 bench spots in the Scott Fishbowl. And I got him from my second or third to last bench spot. I was shocked he was still there. So I'm going with DeSean Jackson here. Yes, I get it where, you know, he is sort of a best ball guy at this point. He'll have some big games and some games where he'll disappear. I understand Winston won't be there for the first 3 games. And maybe I have to eat it for then. But for where I'm getting him at 161st, he's not my top 4, top 5 wide receiver. I can bench him until Winston comes back if I so choose, if I like my matchups better. So that's where I'm going with this. Sanu, I already said how much I like Ridley, so I think Sanu's third choice now with Atlanta. And Ginn, he's definitely a best ball guy. So if I'm going to go with the best ball guy, I might as well go with the better player at this point, DeSean Jackson. So I'm going to go with Jackson here. But I think each does have some value here. I just like DeSean Jackson for where he's going.
Yeah, I see. The thing with D-Jax that is worrying me a touch is, you know, is what I said just kind of before, just the chemistry stuff. And the fact that the health is there is a bit concerning as well. We're talking season long. I take DeSean Jackson. If it's best ball, I might wait on Ted Ginn. Sanu, though, I'm just not super interested in. And honestly, part of that's just kind of the way that we've gone through this throughout this show. Really, it's just, you know, you look at the whole situation there, right? And you know, he could really end up being the fourth, even fifth in targets if they still keep Hooper heavily involved. So I don't know how excited I am about that. Let me just ask you quickly about the quarterbacks fantasy wise, right? Because they're varying situations again. Cam and Breeze, very close to each other, are at 6 and 7. Matt Ryan, I know that's your guy, that sweet spot at 13. Jameis is at 26. Now, obviously, you would need to pair him with somebody else. I'd probably rather pull Matt Ryan out because I know then that would be easy for you. So let's say, would you rather draft Cam or Breeze early or wait and pair Jameis with a guy earlier? Because Jameis wouldn't be the first one you would take, but have some type of pairing, maybe a Dak, Derek Carr with Jameis Winston, or early go Breeze or Cam.
If I had those two choices, I'd probably go with Breeze because I can get him about round 7. So that's not that much earlier for me. Okay. Cam is probably still going to cost you around 6. I might even do that if it's at the end of round 6. Those are safer choices for me. That being said, you know, in the Scott Fish Bowl, I got caught. And I did. It's a super flex league for those who don't know. And I did take Russell Wilson at the I had the turn 12 and 13. So I took Russell Wilson with one of those picks. At my next pick, the third pick, or whenever I went again, there was a big-time run at quarterbacks. And, I mean, everybody and their mother went. And I took Winston. I did take Winston for the reason of what you were hinting at. I knew I was going to take another quarterback, you know, relatively soon, and I would take a lesser guy. You know, and I ended up pairing him with Case Keenum. And I don't mind that. You know, I think I can win with Keenum and Russell Wilson until Winston comes back. And then Winston and Wilson – there's a fine pairing for me as far as two quarterback leagues. So I'm not really worried about it. Now, in one quarterback leagues, things have to go pretty wrong for me. Assuming a 12-team league, things would have to go really wrong for me if I ended up getting Winston as my quarterback. Because I'm not planning on doing that. There are definitely 12, 14, 15 quarterbacks I would take ahead of him. So if I ended up with Winston, I gambled somewhere, or this league was crazy where people were taking backup quarterbacks in round 8 and round 9 before I even started to get mine. Yeah, it could happen. In the draft that was at the RotoWire draft last week, I ended up with Alex Smith as my starting quarterback. You know, because people did take, like I just said, in round 10, I could have taken my quarterback, could have had a choice of 4 or 5 guys, Ben, Rivers, Mariota, Luck, they were all there. And then before I went again, which is like 17 picks later, 10 quarterbacks went. And I was, like I said, five or six people took backups, which in an industry league was shocking to me. Did not see this coming for a one quarterback league. And I ended up having to live with Alex Smith as my quarterback. Matt Ryan went the pick before me. So that was disappointing. So you never know what could happen here. But even then, I still ended up with Alex Smith. And I backed him up with someone did take Winston before. I would have taken Winston as my second quarterback there. I was looking to get him. I ended up being backing up Smith with Eli Manning, which is not great, but I'll have to, you know, I've got to do what you got to do. Maybe I'll make a trade at some point during the season to get one of those backup quarterbacks from somebody. So the bottom line is you can get caught in the league. I got caught. Yeah, it happens. I didn't plan it that way. And hopefully Alex Smith can turn things around in Washington.
George, quick, we're up against the clock. How would you rank the four teams as of today?
I'm still going Tampa Bay last, Carolina third. Give me New Orleans 1, Atlanta 2. If Jameis Winston was healthy, I might think differently.
Same exact. Both days, same exact, George. We're in sync right now. That'll do it for us here on the Fantasy Sports Today. Thank you, Sean Angle. Thank you to George Kurtz. I'm Kevin Walsh. See you guys next weekend.